Laura's on assignment today, but standing by, the loyal right-hand person, Bill Schlecke joins us today.
Yeah, Laura's servant is what you have today. How's that?
There you go. I probably wouldn't go that far.
Hey, I would. I was planting shrubs Saturday and Sunday.
Oh.
And, she was pointing while I was digging and planting. So
good for you.
Yeah, she's a good pointer. know what we ought to talk? Oh, go ahead.
Good weekend to get the shrubs in.
Yeah, although I was up north,
okay.
And there was a strong, this is where I was putting the shrubs in, up in Ottawa City. But I'm telling you what, there was a strong south-southeast wind yesterday that was really cranking up against the break walls, the retaining walls that are up here. There is, I'll tell you what, this high water on the Great Lakes is causing some real damage. I'm in good shape. I've got a really solid break wall that was put in 86, when it was the former record high. But we're now, for May, it was 6 inches above a former record in 1986.
Wow.
And yeah, and it's going to go higher. I mean, we're still in the time when it continues to increase in level. So it'll be interesting to see what happens here. It's very, very difficult for a lot of property owners along the lakes. So anyway, but you know what we ought to talk about, don't you think, is the consequence of the flooding, the 500-year rainfall and rainfall event that we had a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
On the 18th, actually 2 weeks ago, I guess now, the 18th. And all the damage and what people can do about it and what's happening with it. And maybe the place to start, and the only reason I say that is I was watching TV over the weekend, and for the first time I saw Jeffrey Figer on TV, and a whole bunch of ads directed to people who were downstream or living on Wixom Lake or downstream from the Edenville Dam, asking for or pitching for clients to represent as a result of that damage. So maybe the place to start is what kind of liability does somebody have with respect to all this flooding? Because most homeowner insurance, almost all homeowners insurance, does not cover the damage from rain-caused flooding. It's an exclusion under most policies. That's also true. You know, a lot of these municipalities, because the stormwater system was overwhelmed, ran into their sewage treatment facilities, so a whole bunch of homes ended up, and businesses ended up with sewage in their basements or in their crawl spaces. And so the issue becomes, is anybody liable for the sewage, the damage caused as a result of the sewage? And again, insurance generally doesn't cover it. So who do you look to try and get recompense? And there really isn't a whole lot available.
Yes, what a natural disaster.
Yeah, I mean, there is a statute in Michigan that provides for, the starting point is, let me back up. Let's jump back to the Edenville Dam for a second, because that was not a publicly owned dam. It wasn't owned by a municipality. It was
right.
Owned by a company called Boyce Hydro, I think, a private owner. And so they're not immune from suit. If it was a municipally owned dam, then generally tort liability or immunity from tort liability kicks in. So you couldn't sue the municipality. So now the issue is going to be, since Boyce Hydro is a private company, whether or not it was at fault. It's pointing the finger at the Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy, the state, saying that the state kept insisting that they keep the level up, whereas Boyce Hydro was saying we want the level down because we think that the dam isn't structurally sound enough to take, in this case, a 500-year flood. So there you're going to have a real battle as to who has the liability. Actually, one of my friends and colleagues and a guy who I've drawn on, his expertise is the former dam inspector for what was then the DEQ, but he retired about 5 or 6 years ago, so he's out of the picture. But I've had some interesting conversations with him about the maintenance or lack of maintenance of privately held dams. So one of the issues now is going to be who's liable for this failure, and I'm sure that Boyce Hydro isn't going to have enough money to satisfy the thousands of claims that exist. I think that there were something like 10,000 homeowners that were displaced
right.
as a result of the failure. Does that sound right?
Yeah. There was 10,000. I don't know if they all owned a home, but I know there was 10,000.
Yeah, displaced. Could be some renters. And then all the people on Wixom Lake. Look, I've represented dam owners over the years, and the general position of the DNR, which has jurisdiction over flora and fauna, and now Eagle, formerly DEQ, is they're not hot on dams. They're really opposed to dams as being, in this instance, a danger to the community and also a danger to wildlife. So I'll be interested to see what happens with respect to whether or not the owners of all of what were formerly lakefront properties on Wixom Lake, whether or not the Michigan Eagle and the Michigan DNR are going to allow that dam to be rebuilt. Can you imagine the consequence of that? I mean, you bought property on Wixom Lake, and all of a sudden, it's gone. And the prospect is that it may never return.
Right.
Not a happy prospect. So that's the one issue, is with respect to who's got liability for all of this massive flooding, whether it's the Edenville Dam or whether it's simply a flooded basement. Now, there is a statute in Michigan, but it probably isn't going to apply here to a 500-year flood. This is a statute that says if a municipality owns a sewage treatment facility, which includes stormwater runoff, by the way. In other words, its stormwater system is included within this statute, is that you can go after the municipality, but you have to show that the municipality knew of a defect in the stormwater system or in the sewage treatment system. And I got to tell you, how often does a 500-year flood come around?
Not often.
Every 500 years. So trying to go after the municipality, going after insurance is going to be difficult, if not impossible, because it's an exclusion from coverage. Going after the municipality that operated the stormwater disposal system is going to be almost an impossibility here unless you can show a defect, and the defense is going to be, look, who could protect against a 500-year flood? We don't do that, and we're not required to do that. But I will say that if a person who was damaged, suffered either property damage or personal injury as a result of this event, if it is possible that there was a defect in the system, they have only 45 days from the date of the event or when they should have discovered the damage, which would, in this case would be the event, only 45 days to give a notice under the statute to the municipality. And the notice has to be very specific. I mean, if anybody listening is really interested in this particular aspect of it, again, I'm saying it's pretty far-fetched, but it's Michigan Compiled Law, Section 691.1417 and 1.8 and 1.9. And that's the statute that says that a municipality that operates a stormwater system or a sewage disposal system has a potential liability if there's a defect. And if you miss a 45-day notice window, you're done. You cannot proceed with the claim in court. So if I don't have insurance, I don't have the municipality to go after, I now look to private property owners. In the Edenville case, it's going to be Boyce Hydro. But now I get into an issue of, well, okay, my property got flooded because my neighbor's property didn't, and all of the runoff from his property came down on my property and caused the damage. So now you look to the adjoining property owner or somebody who is upstream from you. When I say upstream, I mean surface water, where the flow comes down, to determine whether or not that property owner has any liability. And again, you know, in the case of a 500-year flood, I mean, up here in Tawas, for example, on the 18th, I went out on the morning of the 19th, and right across the river from me is a railroad track, and the railroad track had completely washed out. I mean, the track was now sagging down into this waterfall that was coming off of the street, and in the street there was about 4 or 5 feet of water. And so, you know, who's going to have liability for that? Who could anticipate the 500-year flood? I will say that I made a prediction that the railroad company wouldn't be running a train on that track for probably a couple of months because of the extent of the damage. Guess what? They had a train running across at 5 o'clock the next day. Wow. It was the most amazing repair job I've ever seen. They came out on the morning, they came out on the 19th, which is the day after the flood event. Came out on the 19th, took a look at it, reviewed the damage. The next day they were out with gravel, trucks, men, crew, and they got that thing up and running within one day. It was an absolutely astounding job. Obviously, they've been through this routine before.
Well, Bill, I can't see people suing their neighbors, but we can certainly. That company that owned the dam, is they better have some pretty good attorneys.
They're probably going to have good bankruptcy attorneys, Greg.
Yeah.
I mean, that they would be where this is headed. They do have to maintain insurance. They were originally a FERC dam, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, because they were generating hydropower from that dam. And then in 2000, I think it was 18 or something, they weren't generating enough power to be qualified as a FERC dam. And FERC regulates the dams that are under its control. The state doesn't regulate those. The federal government does. But when that Edenville Dam was no longer a FERC dam, the jurisdiction was taken over by the state, by the Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy. And so it had jurisdiction over that. And so, as I say, the issue is going to be who really is at fault here. Was it the state for having told Boyce Hydro, hey, you need to keep the level up in order to maintain the animal life that's there, particularly the mollusks that resided in the lake? Did Hydro Power keep it up simply for recreational purposes or for hydro generation, whatever it is? I mean, I just don't know. But let me jump back to the private property owner. I agree with you. It's going to be very difficult to go after your neighbor or the adjoining property owner. But the law is that a property owner cannot change the direction, the rate, or the volume of water going across his or her neighbor's property. And there are plenty of lawsuits involving neighbors who have somebody who comes in and builds a home on the lot adjacent to them, and they change the elevations, and all of a sudden they now have flooding on their property that they never had before. So the issue becomes, did they change where the groundwater, where the surface water runs off onto their property?
Yeah.
Did they change it so that there was a higher volume? Did they change it so that there was a greater rate? You know, that's why when you get a building permit for larger projects, they have to have a detention or a retention pond, because they're changing what that flow is onto the adjoining property.
This is different than that, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, again, this is an exceedingly rare event,
right?
And you'd be hard pressed to show that the fact that your property flooded as a result of this 500-year flood was a consequence of something that your neighbor did to change the rate of water or the direction of water coming across your property. So I was down in Jackson last week, and you know, it didn't seem like the flooding was as bad down there as it was here. They have declared, or up in Taos, they did declare Iasco County an emergency for the county. But I don't, that did not happen with Jackson County, did it?
Yeah, we had some, certainly some roads that flooded over, and a couple bridges, I think were affected. One is still shut down, but I think the roads are all back open after a couple days. No, it wasn't as bad, but, even our, little tributary out here came right up to the banks.
Yeah, Yeah. I mean, it's, and I mean, as far as the Great Lakes are concerned, just the volume of water that fell over the Great Lakes raised it an inch or two, and now you've got all the runoff going into the Great Lakes as well. So, it's a real issue. You know, you're talking about roads. The other thing that Laura asked me to talk about a little bit was, you know, what's going on Franklin Street and Martin Luther King Boulevard?
Right.
In terms of assessment?
The assessments, so,
Yeah. And, you know, the issue of how you get that assessment imposed, we talked a little bit about that last week because it was up before the city council. I think at the Tuesday meeting, or I can't remember whether it was a Wednesday special meeting, but at any rate, yeah, that's become an issue too. And I suspect with, you know, you can tie the flooding in with that you're going to have some damage to roadways. So now how do you fund the repair of that particular roadway? Are you hearing, I mean, is there much chatter?
I don't think there was any damage to those projects. Let me put it that way.
Was there road damage, though, down there? I mean, up in Hyosco County, there were all kinds of roads that were washed out. So now they're going to be looking for state funding, federal funding, and, you know, I don't know about some of the smaller roads. They're private roads, not feeder or connectors, where the private property owners are going to be responsible for some of that repair.
Yeah, there were some out-county roads that were washed over. I don't think they were washed out, but certainly nothing that involved, nothing in the city.
Yeah, okay. All right. Is there any chatter down there about what's going on with respect to the assessments, the road assessments?
Well, I know is the council passed those Tuesday night at their meeting.
Yeah, they passed, and I didn't get a chance to talk to Laura about it over the weekend. Was this the first hearing to determine the necessity, or did they actually determine the amount of the assessment?
That's a good question.
Yeah, because in terms of assessment for road assessments, what the process is you have a first hearing at which there has to be a determination by the municipal body of the necessity of the improvement. And the law is that if the municipality makes a finding that it is a necessity, that it's a necessity this road be repaired. And I think nobody can contest. Have you been down Franklin Street lately?
Yeah.
Man, what'd you think?
It's not good. Not good.
Did you have to have your automobile repaired as a result of it?
Well, I stay away from that.
So my point here is that the law is that in the first hearing, if a municipality makes a finding that there's necessity, the presumption is that the municipality's determination is a legitimate government purpose and presumptively is valid. Now, it can be challenged. I mean, if somebody wants to challenge that it is not a necessity that Franklin Street be repaired or replaced, they can do that, but that's a real uphill battle. And that's particularly true since this also includes the replacement of the lead line, the lead lines. So necessity is going to be pretty much a loser. Then the next issue is the amount that is being assessed to the private property owner. And my understanding, and again, I didn't get a chance to talk to Laura at length about this, is that there's a cap on what's being proposed by the city council.
Right.
And I think I'm right. I think it's only the first hearing that's been held. Now they're trying to determine what the amount of the assessment is going to be. And that requires the assessor to determine what is the benefit to the property owners along Franklin Street. And the point here is if you're making an improvement to, let's take Brown Street, for example, you couldn't assess the full cost of that improvement to the property owners along Brown Street because the benefit does not accrue solely to the owners along Brown Street. Only a portion of it does because so many people use Brown Street as a connector to get from north to south. The same thing is true of West Avenue or 4th Street. And so the question then becomes is how much of a feeder is Franklin Street for getting west to east, east to west now that it's two ways. And so the assessor has to make a determination as to what the value is of improvement to the individual property. And so that's the starting point for the council. My understanding is that the council then is trying to come up with a plan so that there is a cap so that no single owner gets dinged an excessive amount. But it is a burden on the property owners. I mean, there's no two ways about it. Okay, and I'm sure that there are some objections by some of the property owners along there, but again, nobody can really contest that, hey, look, this street needs to be improved. The question is, who's going to pay for it? And I do know that they're paying, I think the water lines are being paid out of the water funds. That, in other words, those aren't being assessed. And so it's strictly the road repair that is being assessed to the private property owners. And again, I'm not sure exactly what the percentage is and what the numbers are, but that's the way the process works.
We'll have to get an update from the council on that.
Yeah. Is there a meeting tomorrow night?
I don't believe so.
Okay, so the next meeting is going to be the following Tuesday?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. It's hard to believe it's already June 1, by the way.
Hey, good talking to you today.
All right. Should we give them Laura's email and phone number?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. You can reach my lovely wife, Laura, at 517-780-3800 or 3838. I think either one of those numbers gets to her. Or you can email her at Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at, and then it's all numbers, 780-3800.com. Hey, Greg, nice talking to you.
Thanks,
Have
Bill.
A great week, and talk to you next Monday.
Take care.